Welcome to In Moderation,
the show where we give you a moderate dose of info, sarcasm, and we already know we're not approved.
Welcome back to the podcast. For our guest today, we've got Oakley.
Oakley, say hi. She's a little bashful.
But in addition to Oakley, we've also got Tyson, who is also known as the warrior philosopher here. And he's literally right beside me. So at any point in time, Liam will give him the signal and he'll put me into some sort of chokehold and they'll do the rest of the podcast without me.
It will be very confusing for the listeners. They'll just hear a lot of grunts.
They'll just hear the grunting. And like, yeah.
This podcast took a turn.
Right?
Well, you got to have drama.
All right. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, where to start?
How about the tattoos? Because, I mean, look at those tattoos.
Well, yeah.
Sucks for the listeners, but yeah. Hey.
Well, I started collecting them when I was just barely allowed to. I think I got my first one on like the day after my 18th birthday and started collecting them ever since. My day job is teaching martial arts. I teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and kickboxing. Started training when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
For martial arts. I was a swimmer before that for 10 years. That was my first competitive sport, was swimming. I went to school for massage therapy, but became a statistic in that pretty quickly. Worked for about 2 years in that industry and then moved on to the strength and conditioning.
What you're saying
industry.
Is you found more of a passion in massaging people with your fists.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's a different kind of development. But I moved on to the strength and conditioning industry. I worked as a kettlebell instructor for a long time. I teach certification courses for the IGATSU organization. So I teach kettlebell instructor certification courses, and I teach lifting and programming for personal trainer certifications. I've just been kind of doing a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything now. A jack of all punches, anyway.
So you say you've been to like a gym or two, like in your life? Like
once I've been twice. To a gym or two, been kicked out of a gym or two. Yeah.
Was it a Planet Fitness? Do you have a story?
Not a Planet Fitness. Alberta OGs will remember the old World Health Club back in the day. But it's funny because nowadays you see things like kettlebells and chains and all that kind of stuff. It's just ubiquitous. Like you see it in every single gym. But there was a time when I was, getting kicked out of gyms for bringing in things like kettlebells and chains to train with. It was really funny. I got blacklisted at a World Health Club once, which I didn't know was a thing. But yeah, it would actually pop up with a little note whenever I signed in with my little key tag thing saying, basically check me for outside equipment before allowing
that's
me in
great.
The
house. I thought you went Joey Swole on
kettlebells.
No, that seems to be what they were worried about, because they would say, well, we're not covered by insurance because our personal trainers don't know how to use this stuff or something. They just sent me a line. But, being young and aggressive, I always just kind of shot back. It's like, well, you got a punching bag upstairs. Like, where's your certified boxing coach? It's way more likely that some kid is going to break his hand hitting the punching bag than one of my chains is going to, fly to my hand or at somebody's neck all of a sudden.
But at least not unless it's on purpose.
Yeah. So it's a lot of this stuff now. It's kind of funny just going into a gym and seeing kettlebells there, because I was one of those people getting kicked out for bringing in kettlebells a long time ago.
I'm definitely curious what got you into martial arts, because about a year ago myself, I joined a Muay Thai kickboxing gym. They also do BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mm-hmm. but I haven't gotten into that, just short on time. But I really enjoy the Muay Thai, not just like the athletic, get the exercise in, but also just kind of a mental, like, I don't know. It's just kind of, it's funny because it's aggressive, but also very peaceful in a way. And
Oakley? You made it so daddy can't learn BJJ.
Well, let's make sure you don't forget the last J on that. I don't want to have that been misconstrued.
Well, yeah, it's close enough that BJJ is actually a banned hashtag on TikTok. You have to write out the whole thing, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, if you want a hashtag.
So much. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's what got me into it originally was that I was a swimmer for 10 years, as I mentioned, and swimming is one of those sports where it's been around for so long, and it's such a, you know, relatively speaking, accessible sport that it's a huge Olympic sport in some countries like Australia. It's a huge spectator sport there. So because it's been around so long, and because Canada actually has a pretty rich history of swimming, we have very high level pools in a lot of the major cities and stuff like that. So it's one of those sports where if you show potential for being any good at it, they basically want to start training you like a professional athlete.
They shove you into a freezing lake and say, swim to the other side.
it's kind of like, you know, dancing or gymnastics. Like, you know, how a 13-year-old trains is really not that different from how a 20-year-old trains. It's just, so it's one of those sports where if you start to lose your passion for it at all, you quit. Like, there's no like, I kind of like it, but I just do it because I'm used to it. Because by the time I was 13, I was in the pool probably 25 hours a week.
At least until it became ice, and then hockey.
Yeah,
swimming is important in Canada because it's what we do when the ice melts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not that I got the same respect as the hockey players in the school, but yeah, it's a really tough schedule. It'd be, you know, 3:30 a.m. practices a week, back after school for another practice, practices on Friday, practices on Saturday morning, plus running, plus weightlifting. So I'd had enough of it by the time I was about 15. I did very well in swimming, but I just had enough. I was ready for something different. And I thought to myself when I quit swimming that I'd be excited to have all this free time. And I really enjoyed it for about a week, just doing nothing all the time. But then I realized that I just wasn't wired for that. I had this 25-hour hole blasted in my life all of a sudden, and I needed to fill with something. And at the time, when I was 15, I thought I was going to go the police or military route. I had kind of a boyhood dream of being Joint Task Force. So I started doing Kichiryu Jujutsu and Kyokushin Karate, which Kichiryu Jujutsu I was taught by a police officer. So there's a lot of police officers and military guys who were in the class with me. So that I felt like that was a good fit. And the Kyokushin Karate was just kind of a side thing. And I trained at both of those for 4 years, basically just completely replaced the swimming schedule with training all day in martial arts.
But by the time I was in the water to kicking on land.
Yeah. And this was when, the UFC was getting really popular. Like the first season of the Ultimate Fighter reality show was getting going around that time. And I had been training for 4 years, and I was just kind of getting out of that mentality of I want to go the police military route and getting really excited about competing more in martial arts. So that's when I switched to Muay Thai, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, started taking MMA more seriously, had a couple MMA fights, started coaching, and the rest is history. I just never stopped doing it. So it started as just a replacement for swimming as something to do and something that I thought would fit well with my future career. And then I just fell in love with it, just never stopped.
You know what's great? Like every other guest, when we started having them do their own introductions, because before that we were doing really, really terrible introductions. We got comments. We were like, we need better introductions to people. Everybody else, they never know what to say. And it's always like just a 10-second, I don't know, this. And then we got you, just boom, there it all is.
There you go.
Got from that was Canada has a military. I was pretty sure they just like apologized for things and everyone was like, oh, that's cool. Dude, like you're Canada. Oh, like what do we
do? JTF2 is one of the most elite task force in the world.
We get that a lot because we've mastered passive aggression so well that people forget that we're pretty good at active aggression too.
The art of passive aggression is way more effective.
Canada's military is small by American standards, because that's always
been small by American standards.
But it is very much kind of a similar situation to Taiwan, where it's sort of an asymmetrical warfare approach, like because the military is small, we have a very high focus on quality. So, like, you know, our military is small in terms of how many people are in it and what the budget is and all that. But, you know, each individual part of it is world class when you compare apples to apples with the same type of units elsewhere. Like Joint Task Force 2 is an A-level operation. And, you know, ever since World War One, the Canadians have always been in it, and we've represented very well. So it's it is kind of funny because we do have that reputation as like, oh, you know, they just kind of tag along with wherever the U.S. goes, which to a certain extent is true because
Canada, you're lagging by. Let's go. We're going to Vietnam again. Yeah. Yes, again. Let's go.
Yeah, it's, you know, for some of us is a little uncomfortable how tied at the hip we are to the United States energy and military interests, but it is what it is. We share the longest active border in the world. We're both of each other's number one trading partners. A lot of people are actually surprised by that because it seems obvious that we are the number one, that the U.S. is the number one trading partner for us.
Right.
But a lot of people don't know that we are actually the U.S.'s number one trading partner too.
Oh yeah.
The U.S. trades more with Canada than it does with China.
A lot of Marine stuff they learned from JTF too.
I mean, I know we have Team America World Police, though. So, like, that's, I mean, that kind of, I feel like that makes up for some of America. Fuck yeah. Oh,
I watched Team America, like, once every, like, 2 to 3 years. I saw the premiere of it, what it showed here.
And I completely stand behind this.
It's one of my best, like, movie theater memories of all time because my face muscles were physically sore to laugh when I left the theater. And every single person in the theater was the same way. We just, everyone in the theater never stopped laughing the entire movie because you just sort of be getting over something funny that had just happened and sort of winding down, and then something else hilarious would happen, and they would just, they you know, Hans Bricks would be on the screen saying, "We will write you a letter, and we will make it. We'll write you a very stern letter telling you how angry we are."
But, you want a fun fact about that movie? There's actually like Trey Parker and Matt Stone, when the executives, you know, like the producers, were asking for, like, you know, updates on it, they sent them just like the very beginning clip of the movie. And if you've ever seen the beginning of the clip of the movie, it looks horrible. Yeah. Like, it's supposed to look horrible, and then it zooms out and it is what it actually is. But they just sent them the first clip, and one of the executives apparently stood up and said, "They fucked us." Like, they were so mad.
That sounds exactly like what Trey Parker
and I love those two dudes. It's great.
I love them so much.
Podcast episode 50, we're just going to have a special event viewing of everybody. You know, we'll get everybody into a room together. We'll have a special viewing of it.
Oh God!
Of Team America World Police, I'm in.
Well, and if you had told me that South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut would still be relevant pop culture touchstone in 2024, and so incredibly relatable to everything that's going on, if you told me when that came out that, like 30-ish years from now, there's, you know, you're still gonna be able to watch this movie and see the and, you know, have Chef asking the general, "Have you ever heard of the Emancipation Proclamation?"
I don't listen to hip hop. Oh yeah, I know that movie quite well.
That possibly still be something we're thinking about in 2024, and it's like, no, we're in many ways going backwards.
I like this podcast shifted from, like, forget nutrition and, like, exercise. What do you guys think of movies and, like, South Park? I feel about that.
Hey, it's our podcast. We can do what we
want.
If you look hard enough, you can find connections in anything.
Oh, so where do we even go from here?
We'll find our way back.
So you train young people, children.
Yes. My classes start at 5 years old.
5 years old. Oh, okay. So hopefully
five years old. Until five. A few more years. Okay. Yeah. No, I would love to know, like, just kind of for people, because I was interested in, like, you know, Muay Thai and martial arts, but I didn't really know where to start. Like, I was just kind of like looking up places around here, like gyms. So, like, you know, maybe if you could give people just kind of like what to expect, what to look for, what to, you know, just like, yeah, a few like tips on kind of like getting started into like martial arts. Because anybody listening, I highly recommend looking into it. It's not like a lot of people think you show up and you immediately just start fighting people. It's not even close to that. So, you know, like I definitely recommend it. And I'd love to get just some tips for people like, you know, is interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, as you said, proximity is the number one thing that's going to attract people to a martial arts gym. A lot of people who are involved in it, like I am, would like to think that people are doing more research and like have more specific kind of boxes they want to tick with the place they're going to. But the reality is it's like a gym. It's like a school. It's like a gym. It's like a grocery store. Most people who are interested in martial arts just Google martial arts and just go to the one closest to that. So there's a couple things to cover there. Number one would be people's motivation for starting martial arts, because a lot of people start martial arts as a form of exercise. This is not a bad thing. But there are things you should know if you're considering a martial art just because, like, you don't like going to the gym, you don't like running on a treadmill, you don't like...
I'm really glad we're talking here because I've literally had people asking me what I think about martial arts as a form of
exercise. And it's great that people are, you know, getting creative with their fitness goals. It's like, well, if they have the self-awareness to know, well, I'm just not going to go to a gym and lift weights and run on a treadmill or use an elliptical or bike or something like that for an hour three times a week. I'm just not. So they're trying to find creative solutions to something that's going to get me active and working out on a regular basis. But that sort of makes me forget I'm working out, right? That's, you know, it's something interesting.
Something they get to have fun with.
Yeah. Something that's interesting to pursue that is also a workout, right? So for a lot of people that might be martial arts, it might be, you know, just, maybe we just stick outside the gym a little bit and, you know, get outside, do some cross-country skiing, whatever it is. So if you are thinking of joining a gym or joining a martial art for fitness, there are several major considerations. Number one, is that the focus of the gym where you are thinking of joining, or is it a secondary sort of consequence of the training? Because every single martial arts website, like people talk about like what ChatGPT is good for and what it's not good for. Writing martial arts marketing copy would be the easiest job for ChatGPT of all time, because every single one of them says the exact same thing. Every single one of them says it's going to be an amazing workout. You're going to learn discipline and structure and self-control and self-defense. And you're going to meet great people. Like, half of martial arts clubs are doing about half of those things. Like, there's a lot of martial arts that are not a great workout. B, there are a lot of martial arts clubs that are toxic as fuck. Is this an explicit podcast?
Liam swears all the time.
Sorry, I just realized I dropped an F-bomb. Cool, maybe it's not that kind of... Okay, so there are a lot of gyms that are super toxic, not at all welcoming. There's a lot of gyms who, you know, teach kids classes to help pay the bills, but don't really like teaching kids and don't know how to teach kids because it is a very different skill from teaching adults. Like, teaching people who don't have a fully developed prefrontal cortex versus teaching people that do, very different experience, very different skill set. So, and I've always said that if you don't like teaching kids martial arts, you can't fake it. It's impossible to fake it. The kids know. The parents might not know, but the kids know.
Right.
That if you just try to teach kids the way you teach adults, it's not going to work. So you can't go by the website because every single one of them is going to say it's an amazing workout. Okay. But there's a spectrum from the sort of, you know, 9-round, 30-minute hit places, which are workouts that are vaguely martial arts themed. Right. That's on this side where the central focus is giving you a good workout. You're not really learning martial arts in earnest. Not
doing anything competitive.
Yeah. And I don't say that as a bad thing. Right. There's no such thing as a bad goal for joining a martial arts gym. If all you want is the workout and the martial arts thing is just kind of a secondary consequence, might make things a little more interesting. That's totally fine. It's just like any other kind of training. There's no such thing as a bad goal or a bad training method. There are training methods that don't align with the goals you're looking to achieve and ones that do.
Well, there is a bad training method. It's called V-Shred.
It's called the V-Shred.
So what would you say for people who are getting into it for like exercise purposes? Would you say, do you have like a form of martial arts that you maybe you'd recommend over the others or may stay away from?
It can come down to fitness goals because, like I was saying, there's a spectrum of those gyms that are sort of a workout that's vaguely martial arts themed.
Okay.
And then over here you have people who are teaching martial arts, and the martial arts, learning the martial art is the central focus, and they don't, and it, like, whether or not you get a workout from it is not their main concern. It's not at front of mind. Like, if you want to learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu and you want to be really good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu, there will be some Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes where it's really heavy technically and there's lots of information, but the class wasn't a great workout. And then there's also the component where the better you get at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the more efficiently you can play the game of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So the better you get at it, the worse of a workout it
is. So starting off, you're always going to get a good workout in because you just suck.
Yes, 100%. And then there's clubs in between. Like for me, I've been training for 21 years and coaching for most of that. And I've experimented with the idea of having sort of like workout classes for martial artists in and amongst the martial arts classes. And they always died, especially when it came to the adults over time, because because a lot of the adults that were signing up weren't looking to get a martial arts experience and then go to a workout class too. They were joining the martial arts class to get the workout. So the only people who are really attracted to the idea of doing a workout and then another martial arts class, which is also kind of a workout, were the young competitive fighters, right? So if you are marketing to fighters, it's not going to be hard to convince them that, you're going to do your jiu-jitsu classes, and you're going to do your Muay Thai classes, you're going to do your boxing classes, you're going to do your wrestling classes, and those will be a workout. But that's not the central focus. You also have your strength and conditioning to do. You also have your road work and your weightlifting. It's not going to be hard to convince them. But if you're marketing toward people who have families or are looking to train a couple times a week, they're not going to get up any earlier in the morning because they're already getting up at 6 with their baby. And they just want something they could do a couple times a week.
Yeah.
That is a good workout and is interesting.
Right.
So my classes are mainly for teaching people martial arts. That's my main focus, right? Teaching self-defense, teaching martial arts. But I'm also conscious of the fact that a lot of people are signing up to get a workout. So it's always on my mind. It's not the main focus, but most of my classes are going to be a mix of things that are physically demanding by design and also kind of slower, more technical classes kind of mixed in. So I don't market my martial arts classes as this is a 30-minute HIIT workout, because if people come in expecting that, they're gonna notice how much sitting around talking we do, right? I also recognize that just training in jiu-jitsu, especially at first, is hard. A lot of people are kind of surprised at how hard it can be, depending on what kind of martial arts experiences they've had. So what I would recommend is for people to not just go by the website, but go by try out at least a few places and maybe even just watch a class first, especially if you want to sign your kids up there. You need to watch the class with your kids to see not just how the instructor treats the brand new people that they're trying to market the class to, but also how they treat the kids that have been training there for 5 years, right? Okay. Because that's the kid, that's how they're going to eventually treat your kid, right? Okay. Every teacher is going to be every teacher is going to try to put their best foot forward with somebody who's just walking in and is considering joining. So you can't really gauge what the long-term experience is going to be based on the first few classes. So I always recommend trying out a few places, trying a few classes, maybe even watching the class first and not even trying it yourself. Look not just at their website, but also the kinds of videos they post, right? Because you know, their social media will give you a glimpse into what's most important for them, right? If you're looking to get a good workout, then you can find martial arts gyms where 99% of the videos they post are like transformation videos. Look what amazing shape this person got into. Look how much weight you can lose. Look how strong you can get. And then there's going to be some places where all they post is like people standing on the podium getting medals,
right?
Or like, oh, this, you know, we have the youngest yellow belt world champion. Like, it's what they post on social media is what's most important to them most of the time.
Would it be beneficial to go like talk to them in person and just ask them, say like, hey, I'm a dad, I don't have much time, I'm only looking for this? Or would the instructors most likely just try and lead them into joining anyway and kind of tell them what they want? Like, is it beneficial to like ask them just certain questions or whatever?
I imagine it probably depends on the integrity of the instructor, which is in the first place.
Absolutely. Because like I say, all of the websites say the same thing.
Right.
Generally speaking. But I don't think it's a bad thing to go in and talk to them, because you know, even if they're trying to fool you, the way that they try to fool you will say tell you something about them, right?
Right.
Like I've had to turn away students that were, you know, for instance, like I have students who compete, and I've had students who are very successful in competition, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competition is not my central focus at my dojo. I teach a lot of self-defense stuff. I teach a lot of third-party protection material for police and security and stuff like that. So I've had to turn away students that were like, yeah, like we're thinking of switching, and like they want to know like how often are you running summer camps for competitors? How often are you teaching? How often are you doing just competition training? How much are you doing no-gi? How much are you doing? And once I start to get the feeling that, oh, like they want to hit every tournament, they want to go to the San Diego Open, they want me to travel to coach them and stuff like that, they want to be a world champion someday, I have to tell them, it's like, look, I can teach you Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And if you want to compete, I can help you with that. I have experience, I have expertise, but it's not my main focus. So the kind of people who are going to be attracted to train with me are probably not going to be the same kind of people who are attracted to a super competitive school where everybody's there just to go to tournaments and win medals. They don't care about self-defense. They don't care about anything else. Right. So even within the same martial art, you can have a range of different goals that you can achieve by training there. And if you're lucky, they'll be upfront and honest about that, because it's not like it makes my life easy as an instructor to have a bunch of people on the mats who I know I'm not meeting their expectations. Right. Like, who wants to deal with parents who are like, yeah, you've been teaching self-defense for a few classes now. I noticed that you haven't really been doing much sport training. Like, I don't want to have that conversation over and over again.
Right.
Right. That's not worth $140 a month to me to have that kind of headache where I'm just constantly wondering if everyone on the mats is actually getting what they pay for. Right. So in the long term, I think it's better for the instructor to just kind of attract the personalities that want to do what I want to do with my classes. And if you'd be happier somewhere else, go somewhere else. There's lots of gyms and you'll be happier there. I'll be happier that, you know, I sent you to the places actually to achieve your goals for you. But so that's one thing. You have to go deeper than just reading the website, and you have to go deeper than just whichever place is closest to you. That's the first thing. The other thing is, what kind of martial arts are going to help you to achieve the particular fitness goal that you're looking to achieve? Because, you know, the thing that most often gets people into fitness in general, not just martial arts for fitness, is weight control of some kind, right? Whether they want to lose weight or just not gain weight, like weight control is the number one motivation for people to start a fitness program. Pretty much always has been, as long as we've been measuring that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And once they start doing something for losing weight, they'll often stay in fitness for other reasons. I don't know how many people have, like, you know, joined a CrossFit gym thinking they just want to lose weight and then just falling in love with like trying to get a better Fran time, trying to get a better deadlift. Like lots of people do that. They come for one reason and they stay for another. But if you are looking to get into a martial art for fitness and your main goal is weight loss, it's going to become a more sort of complicated decision. And it sucks because you never want to dissuade somebody from doing something that's active.
Right.
But you also want to help people to be realistic about what kind of choices they can make that are going to help them to achieve their goals. Because exercise thermogenesis, what calories you're burning while you're training is a very small percentage of the total calories you're burning throughout a day.
Yeah.
Like you can run 10K and burn off like one Mars bar. Right. So thinking about what kind of workout is going, like what kind of martial art is going to help you achieve your goals. There's not too many martial arts out there that are going to give you the kind of fitness regimen just built into the martial art, integral to the martial arts training without having to do anything else. That's actually going to be most beneficial for weight control, which is building muscle. Right. If you, exercise thermogenesis burns a very small percentage of the calories per day that you burn. Most of it is burned by just your basal metabolic rate, just the low intensity activities that you're doing throughout the day. And that's governed primarily by how much muscle mass you have, like what your body composition is. The more muscle mass you have, the more calories you burn at rest or while doing low intensity activities. So, like, when somebody wants to train for weight control and they're focused on, oh, I burned this many calories on the elliptical today, right, doing aerobic exercise. Well, aerobic exercise is fantastic. You should do it. But it's, aerobic exercise without changing anything else isn't really going to help to lose weight or control weight all that much. If somebody asks me how they should train to lose weight, I basically train like a bodybuilder and go for short, frequent walks. There's not really a whole lot of martial arts where the training modality of the martial art is like that. Jiu-jitsu is close because jiu-jitsu, you're actually moving a load. You're moving an exterior load with intensity. You're training your anaerobic energy systems. But something like, boxing or kickboxing, which is very aerobically intensive, where you're not really moving an exterior load, you're mostly moving your own body. It's very aerobically taxing, and you're not going to burn as many calories as you think doing it. And it's not the kind of thing that's likely to make a huge difference in how many calories you're burning at rest, because it's not the best way to build muscle mass. So I never want to discourage people from doing something active when they weren't doing something active before, because it will help.
Yeah.
But if people are thinking, well, I'm going to do everything exactly like what I'm doing now, but then I'm going to go and do kickboxing for an hour twice a week, and it's going to make me lose weight like crazy. Yeah. It's probably not. You're going to have to combine that with other life choices and probably other kinds of training to actually achieve those kinds of goals.
I do want to make an argument for working out for weight loss, because yes, it's 100% true. The calories you burn, very minimal, but there's a couple things I definitely find when people start working out, it just encourages them inherently just to make better like diet choices. You're like, okay, I went to the gym today. I did something. Maybe instead of getting the bucket of Popeye's chicken that I normally get, I might actually pick something healthier just because I did that. Like, I don't know. There's something about just starting like kind of a health fitness journey that just the momentum happens, the ball starts rolling, and you're like, okay,
absolutely,
now I'm gonna do something.
What I'm saying is that I'm not gonna lose weight for punching Liam in the face, but it might inspire me to eat
to
better.
Go then eat a banana. Yes. Because you exactly. That's exactly what it would do. So
yeah, punching Liam in the face will inspire me to
eat an actual good fruit. So and also on top of that, I find when people start like going to the gym, one of the main reasons they end up losing weight is just because they're kind of out of the house as well. Because when you're at home and there's just nothing going, I'll tell you, like if I'm just like binge watching a show or whatever, I'll just, chips or whatever, I'm eating, I can plow through that easy. So when you're just out of the house. You're not snacking. You're not doing any of that. You're actually, you're doing something, you know, for me, at least exercise suppresses my appetite. I'm not like on a, you know, working out, lifting weights on a treadmill. Like I cannot wait to eat a whole cake. That's what I want right now, is just a full on cream cheese frosting. Cause that's the best frosting. I don't care what you say. You're wrong if you say anything otherwise. And then, you know, I'm not snacking. I'm actually somewhere else. Those are the two things I find help even more than just the calories you burn.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% correct about that. That's actually something else that's great to mention, is that when you become active, there are so many sort of secondary branches of lifestyle choices that usually go along with that. Because if you eat like crap all the time, and then you try to train at jiu-jitsu 4 days a week, your body is going to rebel against that. You're gonna like, if you like jiu-jitsu and you want to keep doing jiu-jitsu and you want to get better at jiu-jitsu, absolutely, it's going to give you something. It's going to give you something to inspire you to make those other choices. Because when you drink more water, when you address injuries, when you get more sleep, when you eat better quality food, you feel that difference when you go to do jiu-jitsu. So like if you have that sort of anchor in your life where it's like, I like this, I want to do better at this, I don't want to have to take 4 days to recover after doing a jiu-jitsu class, it's definitely going to be a source of inspiration for all those exactly. other little choices that you can make. Also being around other like-minded people.
Yeah.
If you're sitting around the house, you're not hanging out with anybody. If you're going to jiu-jitsu, you're going to be hanging out with a lot of people. And statistically speaking, most of them either joined for the same reason you did, so they're in a similar kind of situation to you, so you can bond over that, and even if it's not an actively acknowledged thing, sort of hold each other accountable. Or you're going to run into a lot of people who, you know, also lift weights, also run, also, you know, to go skiing, also, so you're going to be around like-minded people. Who, once again, it's just like sort of osmosis. You
100% agree.
You talked about how important community is several times.
Like, what did you do this week? Oh, I'm training for like a 5K. Oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll do that as well. Like, you know, that sort of thing. Just you're around people who are interested in being physically active and hopefully other healthy choices as well. So I think that's one of the best reasons to go.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's ultimately when people go to a gym, I think the community, like when people go to a gym and actually stay at the gym and start training there regularly, community has a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
And I really miss that about going to the gym. There's not many things I miss about having to go to a gym. But I train alone or just with my son sort of puttering around with me most of the time. I don't have training partners that I train with full time. I train in my basement or I train at my dojo. I got two gyms, but I'm usually training alone. And the training is the same, but I do miss, like, you know, saying hi to a couple people most of my best friends were either dojo friends or gym friends. And I've been lucky to keep those friends into my 30s. But like, if I had to make friends from scratch now, where the hell would I find them?
Right here on In TikTok.
Oh no, don't find friends on TikTok. It might go well, but it'll probably go terribly.
It's the worst place.
Well, if you got a million followers, you got a million friends, right?
I guess that's exactly how. That's what I tell myself to go to sleep every night.
200,000 friends and 800,000 haters.
Most of them are haters, but you know what? They also help. So. Thanks, haters.
Well, they help us a little less being Canadian and not being able to actually monetize TikTok, which is always hilarious to me whenever somebody's like, you're a paid government shill.
Oh, the paid thing is so funny.
Yeah, where do I sign up for that? Have I been missing out on something?
Apparently.
I love the paid. I love it. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not as simple a choice as just join a martial art and get into amazing shape, because not all martial arts are created equal in terms of how good a workout they are, and if it's not the main focus of the class, then you might find it a little bit disappointing, right? Because and part of that is just again, people sort of mixed expectations around exercise in general, because a lot of people, like when I'm teaching my courses, I talk about this a lot, because I teach things like, you know, nonlinear periodization and stuff like that, where you're not trying to actually kill yourself every workout. The program is supposed to build to a peak and kind of build that long-term momentum. Whereas a lot of, and in Europe and Asia, it seems like a lot less of a problem. If you tell somebody in Asia, that, like, their trainer tells them, yeah, you're going to do 5 sets of 5 at 70%. It's not going to be hard, but we're building towards something. They kind of understand that better. That's just my anecdotal experience anyway.
Interesting.
But in North America, people seem to have this idea that if they're not dragging themselves through a pool of sweat and blood and vomit at the end of the workout, that they didn't achieve anything.
I feel like it's because that's what they've been taught, right? Like, I mean, when you watch something like an infomercial for like Insanity X Plus reaming, and you're like, oh God. And then it starts off and they're just like dying and throwing up and they're sweating everywhere. And they're like, this is what it takes to lose weight. I mean, I guess I'm going to purchase it, do it once, and then give up. I mean, if that's what I have to do.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, and a lot of people will, they have this kind of, well, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing.
Right.
Like if they don't have a background in fitness, or they don't happen to have a trainer, if they haven't actually hired a trainer, I think a lot of people are just like, well, I don't know how much is enough, but I know that if I do too much, that I'm definitely doing enough.
they don't
see that point of diminishing return. Like, surely if I'm working out for 90 minutes a day after doing nothing but sitting on a couch for 5 years, I'm going to lose weight.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong, but it's, yeah, I think it takes for a lot of people, some trial and error.
Oh yeah.
To get to that place where they understand that a program that is sustainable and consistent is way better than one that is, you know, gets those super high highs and super low lows. You do your P90X for a month and then you'll train for another 2 years.
Yeah.
And then you feel bad about it, figure it was you, not the P90X. So you go back to the P90X, doing it for another month. So it's just like, weight loss programs where they're like, the entire process is designed for people to lose a lot of weight really quickly, stop the program, then gain the weight back,
and do it over again.
So it takes just long enough. It's very scientifically developed. It takes just long enough for them to fall off and gain all the weight back, that they don't connect it to the unsustainability of the program they were on.
Yeah.
Right.
They connect it to, well, when I was on the program, I was great.
Yeah.
And now that it's just me without the program, I failed again.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard for them to make that connection. It's like, well, if I just go back to the program, then I'll be fine again. Right. I'm the one I can't
trust. If we took an abusive relationship and made it into a fitness program? I like what you're thinking. We could make money off that. I would encourage anybody who's interested in like martial arts to understand that the possibly losing weight and the yada yada, all that's great. But to focus on just like the mental aspect of it for a second, for me, that is my favorite part. You go there, one, you're just talking to people. It's just fun. You're just chatting. Exercise is great for your mental health in general. And two, there's just something I think just about martial arts, like I said kind of at the beginning, it is this physical and sort of aggressive in a way, but also sort of peaceful and relaxing thing that I has this good combination for me, at least that's how I've experienced it. And I really enjoy it. So I would encourage anyone to at least try it, go to a place, watch a class, try a class, whatever, something like that.
Definitely watch the class. Definitely look at, like I say, look at social media, see what's important to them, because I'm glad that I could be the one to tell whoever's listening to this that there is nothing inherent to martial arts that will make you a better person by training in it.
Yeah.
There are lots of terrible people in the martial arts community.
Oh, I'm sure.
And they were terrible people before, and then they got a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and now they're just a tougher, more confident, more dangerous, terrible person. I've seen, you know, without naming names, I've seen lots and lots of people, lots of examples in the jiu-jitsu community, in the MMA community, where I look at them and I listen to them and I see what they post on social media and I see the values that they have that they're not even trying to hide. And I'm just like, people sign their kids up to train with this guy?
Right.
Like, this, it's dumbfounding to me that, you know, people could say the things they do and do the things they do and, you know, hate the people they hate and still have not only students, but like kids being signed up to train with them. So like definitely watch a class, definitely like look at their social media, see what's important to them, try out a few classes, try more than one, try three classes. It's three different places before you actually sign up for one. They are not all the same. All the websites will look the same, right? But they're not.
You've been
all
really
the same.
Harping on that. I think, guys, if you're listening, I think all the websites might look the same. I think they might all be ChatGPT generated. Find discipline and lose weight and better yourself.
Yeah, I mean there's definitely some resentment built up there. Like even when it comes to the self defense aspect of it, because there's a totally different approach for teaching self defense versus teaching martial arts who say go to tournaments and win medals. Like when I'm teaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for self defense, where I am teaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu techniques, it's the same macro techniques. So the bones of the martial art are the same. The basic positioning and leverage and control positions and distance management and the training methods are kind of similar. But when you teach them in context for going to a tournament or a cage fight or a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament or something like that, where you are fighting somebody else who's also a trained fighter, and there are rules and referees and safety gear and everything else. And then you start training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in context for self-defense, where we are taking into account multiple attackers, weapons, verbal de-escalation, concrete, walls. Like there are so many things about teaching Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in context for self-defense that just training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for sport Jiu-Jitsu, like just going to tournaments and winning medals, I will still bet on somebody who does nothing but sport Jiu-Jitsu 99% of the time, for sure. But if you're going to advertise that you train people for self-defense, but then never actually teach self-defense in context, taking into account any of these things, you shouldn't have it on your website.
Right.
Like, and it's not a bad thing because Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the sport, has exploded in popularity. Like MMA has been popular for a while now, and that was definitely sort of the gateway drug for the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because a lot of people liked the idea of being an MMA fighter, but didn't like the idea of getting punched in the face. Okay, start competing in Jiu-Jitsu.
Nobody else says that. It's just me. Okay, that's fine.
Back in the day when I started training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the communities of MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, especially here in Canada, where we're lagging behind the United States community development, MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu were basically synonymous. Like this, like if you went to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament in 2004, 90% of all the people there competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the sport, were also MMA fighters. Like it was just another thing that went with being an MMA fighter. Whereas now you can go to a tournament in Black Falls. Black Falls and Red Deer are kind of the two main sort of tournament cities for Alberta because it's a decent enough drive for Alberta, for Edmonton and Calgary to attract people from both. But I mean, you can go to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament where there's like 1,200 people signed up for it, and very, very few of them have ever had an MMA fight or ever will have an MMA fight. Whereas, you know, in 2004 is like, you would hear that there was a tournament happening in Lethbridge and drive 5.5 hours to Lethbridge to have two matches and then drive back home on the same day. Like there was nothing. And where there was something, it was all MMA fighters. now the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu itself has exploded. So it's hugely popular. And there are a lot of clubs who are focusing 100% on competitive sport jiu-jitsu. And when people sign their kids up there, they're just looking at it as another sport, right? They're not really thinking of it as a combative martial art. They're thinking, well, he tried soccer and he didn't like it. He tried hockey, he didn't like it. We're going to try jiu-jitsu, right?
Hey, hockey didn't like it. Kick that kid out of Canada.
I never played hockey as a kid.
I'm sorry, son. Do you have your Canadian citizenship card? Could you just hand that over real quick for me? Thank you.
You know how often I get asked if I'm a real Canadian or a real Alberta?
Are you a real Canadian, though? You're not one of those fake Canadians that just walk around all the time.
Yeah, I'm one of those fake Albertans that saw the wind turbines on my drive here and was actually happy about it.
I don't see either of your heads. I don't see either of your heads bobbing up and down when you talk. So I'm pretty sure you're not actually Canadian. Hey, buddy.
I'm not your buddy, guy. I'm not your guy, friend. It's funny because we don't even hear the Canadian accent when we're talking to each other. It's only when you go to like California and they're like, seriously? I'd be like, it's like, oh, I guess I do say a. It just comes out. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, if you're not teaching self-defense, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But if you're not teaching it, don't say that that's a benefit because there's going to be people like, and when I debate this with people, as I have many times, we'll get to a point in the conversation where they're like, okay, fine. Like, we don't teach self-defense, but there's all these other benefits. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but you're admitting that to me now because I have an education and expertise and a background and a frame of reference where you can't bullshit me. You're admitting that to me now in our one-on-one conversation. When somebody comes in and is asking to sign up at your gym, are you telling them that you don't really teach self-defense? No, I don't think so. You're admitting it to me, but it's still on your side. It's still on your website. And you're still using it to market to people one-on-one when they come in. So that means that somebody could walk in who's actually dealing with a very serious situation, right? They want to train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, not because they want to go to a tournament and win medals, but because they have an ex they're worried is going to come back and beat them up because they just got out of jail. That's why they're training in a martial art.
Yeah.
And taking advantage of those people, whether you know you're doing it or not, I don't think is acceptable. So it's not just about money. It's also about just being a good person and not taking advantage of people who don't have the background, don't have the expertise, don't have the bullshit meter to understand who they're talking to and how they might not be getting out of this what they think they're getting out of it. And there can be real world consequences for that.
I think the single most important thing I personally think you said in regards to the self-defense was the verbal de-escalation,
right?
Which nobody who's training for tournaments, they're not going to train that. There's no reason to.
We're both here. We both signed waivers. We both know we're going to get in the fight.
Although I would totally watch that. I would 100% watch a Brazilian jiu-jitsu match where the goal is to verbally disarm the other person and get them to step down. It's just they get a little podium.
That's Canadian MMA for you.
Like, I would watch it. I'm not going to lie. I would 100% watch that.
That would be good. That would be good for like a YouTube gag, have somebody sign up for a martial arts tournament of some kind. And then like, and then all of a sudden when he says go, it's like, well, dude, you're just trying to punch me. Hold on. We are not on the same wavelength. What did I do?
Let's start over. What's your name? Where do you come from?
Listen, we can handle this.
Let's workshop our feelings.
What's going on in your life that's making you so angry, and how can I help you?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do whatever it was.
It's one of those things where if you only ever trained at a place where they taught sport Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or boxing or anything else, and somebody asks you, well, are you learning self-defense? It probably wouldn't even occur to you that you had spent no time thinking about verbal de-escalation in your training for boxing, because why would you? Right. But it's one of those things where it seems obvious once you're told, but it's not something that the average person without a background would even think about. But it's like, arguably, the most important part of the training.
Yeah.
Like I remember when I was seven and I first started training and I first tried karate when I was seven. And I remember the self-defense aspect of the training that I got in that class when I was seven, where they're like, okay, self-defense time. They throw a punch at you. You go, blah, blah. It's like, well, looking back at that now, knowing what I know, it's like, well, it's kind of turning the movie on in the middle, isn't it? Like, why is the guy punching me? We're just fast forwarding right to the part where he's punching me. That's the self-defense training. It's like, how many people are just walking up and punching you in the face that you think this is applicable self-defense training?
How many Steven Seagal movies have you watched?
Against the cat right
That there was no other way to handle this. But, you know, or here's another good example. How about talking about proportionality in your self-defense response? Right? Because Canada's criminal code, it's a little different in the Wild West down where you are, but that's on a state-by-state basis.
Listen, we have freedom down here. If I have the freedom to punch whoever I want, okay?
Yep.
It's freedom.
It's like Jimbo and Ned say, well, it's coming right for us.
It's coming right for us.
Yeah, as long as you yell it, it's coming right for us. You can punch whoever you want. It's great. But, you know, when I'm teaching little kids, right, I'm teaching them techniques and I'm talking about how, well, just because they shove you doesn't mean that you get to just throw them on the concrete and break bones. That's not a reasonable response. You're going to be the one who gets in trouble for that.
Right.
Right. Because Canada's criminal code, section 33, I think it is, that deals with self-defense specifically, actually lays out a bunch of criteria that will be, that will be considered by the judge that's handling your case. And a lot of the criteria are all about kind of what options you had and when you had them. Right. And essentially if you defend yourself physically in self-defense, even if they attacked you first, you still have to be able to make a case that any reasonable person in your position would have done what you did. So if somebody throws a punch at me and I sweep the punch, close the distance, take them out of the ground, and I'm holding them down, at that point, I'm no longer under threat. So if I start dropping elbows on the guy, now I could potentially get in a lot of trouble for that, because I had the option not to hurt this guy anymore after that point, and I made the choice to hurt him. So that conversation is not going to happen in boxing. It's not going to happen in competition Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? Where, you know, like I'll look at some self-defense training videos and it's like, oh yeah, the defense to like push on the shoulder is like palm heel strike to the face, throw on the car. It's like that could literally kill someone. If I do Osono Gari on somebody and throw them on the ground and they don't know how to break fall, they don't know what I'm doing, and they hit their head on the concrete, they could literally not figuratively die from that.
Yeah.
So you have to teach martial arts. If you're teaching for self-defense, especially if you're teaching to tactical populations, police, soldiers, security, you have to mix the physical techniques that you're teaching with their use of force parameters that they have to operate in. Right. How many guys have you heard that worked as bouncers and bragged about how many fights they got into as bouncers and how awesome they are? Like you're bragging about being bad at your job.
It's true.
Who brags about being bad at their job?
That is also the American way, in case you haven't heard.
If you work security or personal protection, or you're a bouncer, whatever it is, and you're getting into fights all the time, that's you being bad at your job. Your job is to cool the temperature down, to make sure everyone's having fun, to make sure everybody is safe. Even the person you're kicking out of the bar, it's your job to make sure that they're safe. So the when you talk about like use of force, well, if you're training in boxing or Muay Thai to go and have ring fights, there's no use of force conversation there, right? We're not bringing up the Canadian criminal code. So like I say, I don't care if a gym doesn't want to teach self-defense. It's not your area of expertise. You don't like teaching it. You don't want to teach it. Fine. Take it off the website. Take it off the sign.
Right.
Like there's no harm in that. There's no shame in that. There is harm and shame in trying to advertise yourself as something you're not.
Right.
Right.
And it's the same thing for personal training, same thing for nutrition. Like there's lots of personal trainers who are not qualified to teach an off-season football player, right, how to get themselves ready for next season, or you know, a AAA hockey player who needs to gain size and be able to be higher performance to be able to move up to the next level of contact, whatever it is. There's a lot of personal trainers who are very well equipped to handle a certain kind of clientele, not well equipped to handle a different kind of clientele. But when there's money on the line, how many of them are actually going to have the integrity to say, look, this isn't my area of expertise. I would rather refer you to this person who specializes in this sort of thing. Yeah.
I will say I kind of have to get back to getting Oakley so my wife can finish up her job, because you know she works from home, so I hear her in there, and I kind of got to take care of her.
The biggest thing I got from this is similar to what we say about cardio, in that don't do it just for weight loss. Look at it as a way to become active, look at it as a way to become healthy. And do it in a form that you enjoy.
Yes. Yeah. The best form of training is the one you'll do.
Yeah.
Right.
And don't pay attention to their websites.
Yeah. I was in the, that was,
if like, there's I was one in thing the... you take from this, it's go watch South Park. Okay. And then second thing, don't pay attention to the website of the martial arts studios and gyms.
Yeah, I used to make that mistake. I started working at fitness retail around the same time that I was really getting going as a kettlebell instructor. And when I first started selling fitness equipment to people, I thought my job was to try to convince every single person that came in the door that they should be training with kettlebells. Okay. As I grew up more and matured and developed more empathy, I started understanding, okay, what they like is what they're going to do.
When you have a hammer, everything else is a nail. That's one of my favorite quotes.
All right. Well, pretty soon, Amber's going to come in and throw Oakley at your head.
Yeah. April.
Yeah.
April and Oakley.
April, not Amber.
Yes.
I got the A right.
It's close enough, whatever. I don't close care. Enough. Listen, Liam wasn't popular in past, and I was everything from Leo to Leon to Neil. It didn't matter. Names are stupid. It's all just a fabrication that we've come up with.
It's okay. Next time I'll call her Amanda or something.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Just every time it's a new name.
That's what people should take away from this. Watch South Park, and names are stupid.
And names are dumb.
Names are stupid. There we go.
Names are stupid. I've always thought so.
Hot take. I don't like names. Goodbye.
Everyone should get numbers and barcodes.
Oh, there we go.
But if you guys want to talk like Canadian politics or something, you stay on and tell people about that. Because I'm sure you got just hours of material from stuff that I've heard that's going on there. But for me, this American is what? Oh, wait, Cartman's. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
So now that Liam has absolutely ditched us, where can everyone else find you?
Withdrawal.
Screw Liam. Liam's not allowed to find you. He's not going to get to hear this. Where can everyone else find you?
Well, I'm really only on TikTok. We're Canadian. We can't monetize. We don't get shit from TikTok. So it's like, I started my TikTok as just kind of a creative outlet. Somewhere to talk about politics and philosophy and social commentary and stuff like that, where instead of just dumping it all on my wife every time.
She tries
hard, but when I start talking about, you know, Dwight Eisenhower's brinkmanship policies, it's just not something she tends to be interested in. So I started as an outlet. I never saw myself having 230,000 followers. So it's been a weird ride for me. But you can find me on TikTok at The Warrior Philosopher, all one word, not The Warrior Philosopher 1. I have my first fake impersonator account.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Round of applause.
Now I know I've arrived. It's probably an American that's actually making money off of it.
Yeah, that's what they do, right? They steal content and they monetize it.
Yeah. So if you got a friend request from The Warrior Philosopher 1, just know that that's not me. I don't have any other accounts besides the original one.
And then any for our two listeners in Alberta, where can they find you?
Well, if you happen to be in the Edmonton area, I would like to take a martial arts class with me. My place is called Ironside Martial Arts. And you can find me through the website or just send me a DM on TikTok and we can set you up for a trial class.
I'm not sure how many people we have in the Edmonton area. I know we're actually decently popular in Calgary.
Well, there you go.
There we go. Maybe they'll make the trip.
Fantastic.
All right. Liam's not allowed. No Liam's allowed. You have to put that sign on your door now. No Liam's allowed.
Like any Liam or just him?
I don't know. Open it up to all Liam?
I'd have to find out his last name or maybe his number and barcode.
Yeah, the number. We got rid of names. That's right. Number and barcode.
Damn, we should have thought this through before we abolished. Before we abolished names, we should have thought of some of the implications for it.
Yeah. We also should have stamped them. Oh, well.
It's okay. He's tagged.
Hey, wasn't that a great time? Listen to the podcast. You were just, I'm assuming you knew or you were just listening to in moderation. So if you go ahead and hit the 5-star button, is that a thing? The like that, button?
That's a thing. No. Yeah.
The like button 5 on stars. YouTube. If you're on YouTube, hit the like button. Not the dislike button. That's a bad button. The bad like button. Bad
don't
button.
Touch.
Hit all, so hit all the other buttons. The share, the you can go check out
all those things.
Subscribe. Go check out our Patreon. Yeah. We do have a Patreon. It's free to join if you want, or you could give us money. That'd be really cool. Like a dollar or two. It doesn't matter. Whatever you have.
That's super, where you'll find super, all the news for this.
We're super appreciative. You can find all sorts of other stuff there. We do giveaways, I think, sometimes. You know,
sometimes.
All that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So peace.